They tried again to kill me. Not with sanctions and not with diplomatic pressure, but with the drone. I narrowly escaped a NATO drone strike named a Reaper MQ-9, flying at 2,000 feet, carrying two Hellfire missiles. Locked on my vehicle convoy as I traveled from Ouagadougou to a military base in the north. 17 days ago, I should have died. NATO tried to assassinate a sitting African president, and what happened next shocked them more than my survival. Let me tell you exactly what happened that night. Because this isn't speculation. This isn't conspiracy theory. This is documented fact. We have the radar data. We have the communications intercepts. We have the missile fragments. We have everything. It was 11:47 p.m. I was traveling with a small security detail, three vehicles, 12 personnel total. We were on a remote road, 40 kilometers from the nearest town. The kind of route where an explosion could be explained away as an accident, a mechanical failure, bad luck. That's what they were counting on. My head of security received an alert from our newly installed Chinese air defense radar system, the same system NATO said we didn't need, the same technology the West refused to sell us. The same capability they claimed was too sophisticated for African militaries to operate. That system just saved my life. The alert was clear. Unidentified aircraft, high altitude, slow-moving pattern consistent with surveillance drone, loitering directly above our projected route, not passing through, not conducting routine patrol. Loitering. Waiting. My security chief said, Mr. President, we need to change route immediately. I said, how certain are you? He said, the aircraft has been tracking us for 17 minutes. It adjusted position three times to maintain coverage of our convoy. This isn't coincidence. This is targeting. I made the decision in seconds. Divert now. Maximum evasive protocol. We turned off the main road, took a secondary route through rougher terrain, slower, less secure, but unpredictable, harder to track, harder to target. 4 minutes later, two Hellfire missiles struck our original route. Exactly where we would have been if we hadn't diverted. The explosions destroyed a section of road and killed three civilians in a vehicle that had been traveling behind where our convoy should have been. Three innocent people. Dead. Because NATO tried to kill me and missed. We recovered the missile fragments the next morning, analyzed them in our military laboratory, confirmed by independent experts from China and Russia, AGM-114, Hellfire missiles, American-made, fired from an MQ-9 Reaper drone, the same drones NATO operates across the Sahel under the guise of counter-terrorism operations. We also recovered something else, something they didn't expect us to find. Something that proves this wasn't a mistake, wasn't an accident, wasn't a targeting error. Electronic signature data from the missile guidance systems. Data that shows the missiles were locked on a moving target. Data that shows course corrections consistent with tracking a vehicle convoy. Data that proves these missiles were aimed at my convoy specifically, not at a fixed location. They tried to kill me. And they tried to make it look like an accident. I called an emergency meeting of my security council at 3 a.m. My military commanders, my intelligence chiefs, my closest advisors. I showed them everything. The radar data, the intercepts, the missile fragments, the electronic signatures. One of my generals said, "Mr. President, this is an act of war. We must respond militarily." I said, "No. We respond strategically. They expect military retaliation. They're prepared for that. They want that. Because then they can frame us as the aggressors. They can justify intervention. They can rally international support for regime change." I said, "We do something they don't expect. We expose them, completely, publicly, with evidence they can't deny." My intelligence chief said, "Sir, if we go public with this, there will be consequences, serious consequences. They'll deny it. They'll attack our credibility. They'll claim we're fabricating evidence to justify closer ties with China and Russia." I said, "Let them deny it. Let them attack our credibility. Let them claim whatever they want, because we have the evidence, and evidence doesn't care about their denials." The next morning I addressed the nation, live, unscheduled, no advance notice to foreign embassies, no diplomatic courtesy warnings, just truth, raw, unfiltered, undeniable. I stood in front of the cameras and told our people everything. The drone, the missiles, the targeting, the evidence, the three civilians who died because NATO tried to assassinate their president. I said, 17 days ago, NATO attempted to kill me, not because I'm a terrorist, not because I'm a threat to international security, but because I refused to obey, because I chose sovereignty over submission, because I built partnerships they didn't approve, because I exposed their surveillance, because I demanded respect instead of accepting control. I said, "They tried to kill me with the same drones they claim are protecting Africa from terrorism. They tried to murder me with the same weapons they say are defending our security. They tried to assassinate me under the same operational authority they claim is about counterterrorism cooperation." I said, "And they killed three innocent civilians instead. Three Burkinabe who were simply driving on a road. Three people whose only crime was being near where NATO thought I would be. Three families destroyed because a Western military alliance decided an African president who demands respect deserves death." The reaction was immediate, explosive, unprecedented. Within hours, the video had 10 million views. Within a day, 50 million. Within a week, over 200 million people had watched an African president accuse NATO of attempted assassination with evidence to support every word. The international response was chaos, absolute chaos, because they weren't prepared for this. They weren't ready for an African leader to expose them with documentation. They weren't expecting evidence. They weren't anticipating that we'd have the capability to track their drone, recover their missiles, analyze their weapons, and prove their guilt. NATO issued a statement within 6 hours, carefully worded, deliberately vague, predictably dishonest. NATO is aware of allegations made by President Traoré. We categorically deny any involvement in attacks on civilian or government targets in Burkina Faso. NATO operates in the Sahel region under strict rules of engagement, focused exclusively on counterterrorism operations. We are committed to investigating these claims thoroughly. Notice what they didn't say. They didn't deny operating drones in our airspace. They didn't deny firing missiles that night. They didn't deny that American-made Hellfire missiles killed 3 Burkina Bay civilians. They just denied involvement while promising to investigate themselves. The American ambassador requested an urgent meeting. I made him wait 3 days. Not out of spite, but to make a point. When they try to assassinate you, you don't grant them immediate access. When they murder your citizens, you don't offer diplomatic courtesy. When he finally arrived, he came with a delegation, military attaché, intelligence liaison, legal advisor. They were preparing for confrontation. I didn't give them the chance to control the narrative. I said, Ambassador, I'm going to show you something. And then you're going to sit there silently while I explain exactly what it means. I displayed the evidence on a large screen, radar tracking data showing the drone's flight path, communications intercepts showing coordination with a NATO command center, missile fragments with serial numbers traced to American military inventory, electronic signature data proving targeted tracking of a moving convoy. I let them look at it, let them absorb it, let them understand that we had everything. Then I said, this is an act of war. You attempted to assassinate a sitting head of state. You violated our sovereignty. You murdered our civilians. Under international law, we have the right to respond militarily. We have the right to declare war. We have the right to seek collective defense under Article 51 of the UN Charter. The ambassador went pale. He said, Mr. President, I assure you this was not authorized at the highest levels. This must be a mistake, a targeting error, a tragic accident. I said, a mistake? Your drone tracked my convoy for 17 minutes. Your missiles adjusted course to follow a moving target. Your weapons struck exactly where we would have been if we hadn't diverted. That's not a mistake. That's precision. That's intent. That's attempted murder. He said, even if what you're saying is true, and I'm not conceding that it is, going public with these allegations damages our relationship irreparably. It undermines counterterrorism cooperation. It threatens regional stability. I said, our relationship? You tried to kill me and you're worried about our relationship? You murdered 3 of my citizens and you're concerned about cooperation? You committed an act of war and you're talking about stability? I leaned forward. Let me be absolutely clear about something. There is no relationship. There is no cooperation. There is no partnership. There is only the fact that you tried to kill me and failed. And now the whole world knows it. He tried a different approach. Mr. President, if you pursue this publicly, there will be consequences. Economic consequences. Diplomatic consequences. Your international standing will suffer. Your access to Western markets will be restricted. Your aid will be cut. I smiled. Actually smiled. Because the threat was so absurd given the context. I said, you just tried to kill me with a drone strike. And now you're threatening me with sanctions? You just murdered 3 civilians. And now you're warning me about diplomatic consequences? You just committed an act of war, and now you're talking about aid cuts? I said, Ambassador, you've already done your worst. You've already tried to kill me. Everything else is just noise. Sanctions? I've survived those. Isolation? I've endured that. Economic pressure, I've built alternatives. But assassination? That's your final card. And you played it. And you failed. I said, so threaten me with whatever you want. Cut whatever aid you want. Impose whatever sanctions you want. Because you've already shown me that you're willing to kill me if I don't obey. And once you know someone is willing to kill you, their other threats become meaningless. The meeting ended with no resolution, no agreement, no path forward. Just the cold reality that they had tried to kill an African president and failed, and now that president had evidence and wasn't afraid to use it. But let me tell you what happened next, because this is where the story becomes extraordinary. This is where my survival becomes their nightmare. This is where one failed assassination attempt triggers consequences they never anticipated. Within 72 hours of my public accusation, 17 African nations issued statements of support, not generic diplomatic statements. Strong, specific condemnations of NATO's actions. Demands for investigation. Calls for accountability. The African Union convened an emergency session, passed a resolution condemning the attack, established a commission to investigate NATO operations across the continent, demanded full transparency about drone strikes, targeting protocols and civilian casualties. But more importantly, something else happened, something that terrified Western powers more than any diplomatic resolution. African nations started demanding that NATO leave, not requesting, demanding. Mali expelled French forces. Niger terminated security agreements. Chad closed Western military bases. Senegal suspended cooperation protocols. One by one, countries that had hosted Western military presence for decades started showing them the door. And they all cited the same reason. If NATO will attempt to assassinate President Traoré for demanding sovereignty, what will they do to us? If they'll murder civilians in Burkina Faso to eliminate a leader who won't obey, how safe are our people? If they'll commit acts of war against nations that choose independence, how can we trust them? The failed assassination of one African president triggered the collapse of Western military presence across an entire region. The drone strike that missed me hit something far more valuable to them, their legitimacy, their credibility, their claim to be protecting Africa rather than controlling it. I received a call 3 weeks after the attack from a European leader, not through official channels, a private line, a quiet conversation. The kind of call that never gets recorded or reported. He said, President Traoré, we need to find a way to de-escalate this situation. The allegations you've made are damaging relationships that took decades to build. Surely we can reach some accommodation. I said, accommodation? You tried to kill me. What accommodation exists for attempted murder? He said, what do you want? What would it take for you to soften your position, to allow for a more nuanced interpretation of events? I understood immediately. He was offering a bribe, money, aid, investments, whatever I wanted in exchange for backing down, for changing my story. For allowing them to escape accountability. I said, I want you to understand something. I'm not accusing NATO because I'm angry. I'm not exposing this because I want revenge. I'm not pursuing this because I seek compensation. I'm doing this because 17 days ago, you tried to kill me for demanding respect. And if I let that go unanswered, every African leader who demands respect will know they can be killed for it too. I said, so no, there is no accommodation, there is no softening. There is no nuanced interpretation. You tried to kill me, I have proof, and the world will know. He hung up without another word. But the calls kept coming. From other leaders, from diplomats, from intermediaries, all of them with the same message. Can we make this go away? Can we find a solution? Can we move past this? And my answer was always the same. No. Because this isn't about me. This isn't about one assassination attempt. This isn't about one failed drone strike. This is about establishing a principle that African leaders cannot be killed for demanding sovereignty, a principle that Western powers cannot assassinate presidents who refuse to obey, a principle that there are consequences for treating African lives as expendable. Let me tell you about the three civilians who died that night, because they're not just statistics. They're not just collateral damage, they're people, with names, with families, with lives that mattered. Amadou Diallo, 43 years old, father of five, truck driver transporting goods from Ouagadougou to Dori. He was on that road because it was his route, his job, his livelihood. He died because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, because NATO's missile struck near his truck, because someone decided killing an African president was worth killing whoever happened to be nearby. Fatoumata Ouedraogo, 28 years old. Teacher. She was traveling to visit her sick mother in a village north of the capital. She died instantly when the second missile hit. Her mother waited 3 days before anyone told her that her daughter was dead. Killed by a weapon fired by an alliance that claims to protect African civilians. Ibrahim Sawadogo, 16 years old, student. He was riding in Amadou's truck, helping with deliveries to earn money for school fees. He had dreams of becoming an engineer. He wanted to build infrastructure in Burkina Faso. He wanted to develop his country. He died before he could do any of it. Because NATO decided an African teenager's life was worth less than eliminating an African president who wouldn't obey. I met their families. I attended their funerals. I looked into the eyes of Amadou's five children and tried to explain why their father died. I held Fatoumata's mother as she wept and asked me why God took her daughter. I listened to Ibrahim's classmates describe his dreams and his ambitions and his hopes for a future he'll never see. And I made them a promise I intend to keep. I promised them that their loved ones would not die in vain, that their deaths would mean something, that the world would know what NATO did, that there would be accountability, that African lives would be valued, that this would never happen again. That promise is why I'm still pursuing this, why I won't accept accommodation, why I won't soften my position. Why I won't allow nuanced interpretation, because three families lost everything so NATO could try to kill me, and if I let that go unanswered, their deaths mean nothing. I established a commission to investigate all NATO operations in Burkina Faso over the past decade, every drone flight, every strike, every target, every civilian casualty, Everything. What we found was horrifying. Over the past 8 years, NATO drones conducted 473 strikes in Burkina Faso. They claimed all of them were targeting terrorists. They claimed all of them were precision operations. They claimed civilian casualties were minimal and unavoidable. They lied. Our investigation documented at least 214 civilian deaths from NATO drone strikes, 214 people, men, women, children, killed by missiles fired by drones operated by an alliance that claims to be protecting us. Wedding parties struck because someone thought they saw a terrorist. Funerals bombed because gatherings looked suspicious. Markets hit because intelligence was wrong. Villages destroyed because coordinates were incorrect. Family homes obliterated because someone made a mistake. And in every case, NATO issued the same statement. We regret any civilian casualties. We take all possible precautions. We investigate thoroughly. We remain committed to protecting civilians. But they never changed. They never stopped. They never faced consequences. They just kept killing, kept striking, kept making mistakes, kept claiming they were protecting us while they were killing us. I released the full report publicly. All 473 strikes, all 214 civilian deaths, all the evidence of negligence, mistakes, and complete disregard for African lives. The international response was silence, deafening silence. Western media barely covered it. NATO didn't respond. The UN didn't investigate. Human rights organizations issued mild statements. And life went on as if 214 dead Africans didn't matter. That silence told me everything I needed to know. It told me that African lives are expendable, that Western powers can kill us with impunity, that there is no accountability for crimes committed against African people, that the international system doesn't protect us. It protects them.